The Aubrey Masango Show on 702.
Let's walk the talk. Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
So Siya Khumalo is an award-winning author and socio-political commentator. He's written a very, very interesting column in News 24. It is entitled, "If Prince Misuzulu Was Gay, Would It Count Against His Claim to the Zulu Throne?" I did ask the question last week, if you remember, just at the tail end of last week, I think it was Thursday, whether Prince Misuzulu, is he now officially, just in terms of the rules that govern the coronation of various monarchs in this country, is he now officially the king of the Zulu? Yeah? And I didn't get an answer, so I'm hoping that Siya Khumalo will be able to help us out with it. I'm told that constitutionally the presidency must then endorse him as such, following a whole regiment of laws or actions, whatever the case may be. That's what then, in terms of the government, installs him and endorses him as king. And it appears that many of the other ethnic groups are going through something like that. The Bapedi, for example, AmaXhosa, AmaMpondo, are still arguing over who their kings are going to be, and it appears that the Zulus are in the same situation. But I'm very interested to hear from Siya as to why the dimension of his sexual preference, why would that be an issue? And he joins me now on the line. Siya, good evening to you, and thank you very much for your writing this article. My producer Ntateng was, do you want to do it? And I said, yeah, sure. Why not? I'd be interested to hear what Sia's got to say. Why, Siya? Why did that even enter your mind?
Good evening, Aubrey, and good evening to your listeners.
Yeah.
That wasn't the initial thought that crossed my mind, but it is October, which is Pride Month in South Africa.
Yeah.
So one of the questions as I was writing the article, I realized that in this country we're setting ourselves up for a conflict because there are two systems at play that don't really work well together.
Oh yes, yeah.
Yes. So on the one hand, you've got the Constitution of South Africa, where a person who would not fit the mold of your typical Zulu leader, for an example, or prescribed one as a canon, can take political office in any case, whether they are gay or whatever the case may be.
Yes.
In the other system, for an example, I was just reading about, I'm trying to figure out what's happening now with the traditional courts bill, where you can be summoned, whether you believe in the legitimacy of the, this is the last time I checked, whether you believe in the legitimacy of the court or not, without legal representation, which is contrary to our constitution.
Yeah.
Now, add in the financial difficulties that government is facing, and you're going to see that they're going to, I believe they're trying to find ways to deprioritize traditional leaders without quite saying it. I mean, Contra Lesser complained that they would de-campaign the ANC if they were not prioritized in budget. But what it comes down to is the fact that voter turnout is, I mean, based on polls and projections, it doesn't look like it's going to be very strong. So if there is a system in place where we think traditional leaders are going to attract voters to vote for one party or another, and for that reason we can continue spending money on them, that's not necessarily going to be the case. We're now going to have to look at this conflict between the Constitution, what it allows, as well as what customary law, and however it's defined and wherever you find it, what that allows. For me, the fact that it's Pride Month just throws that question. What if that was the shape of the conflict?
Ntungwa, you're asking a very, very important question, even though the way that you couch it is interesting and provocative and dramatic. But I think you're asking a very, very important question. At which level does the constitute trump customary law, or vice versa, I suppose, is the question that you're asking. Because as you correctly say, there are instances that we are beginning to see arise more and more where the Constitution and its values seem not to necessarily be in line with the values and the traditions, perhaps, of indigenous leadership. Talk to me about, let's focus a little bit more on the issue of if the king was gay. Talk to me about that. Why do you think that that's an issue?
Well, it isn't as far as I know, it isn't an actual issue. It's a hypothetical one.
Yeah.
And it's an important one to think about, because South Africa this past year has seen an extraordinary number of hate crimes. So, I mean, I'm in a few WhatsApp groups. Every now and then we get a notification and then it becomes news headlines.
Yeah.
Or yes, where we find out about another member of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community who's been murdered. And we've got to own the fact that a lot of this is fueled by the position of traditional leaders. So in many instances, they assert their position over and against our constitutional rights as gay and lesbian people. Is it so shocking if I turn the tables hypothetically, if that's what's been happening literally?
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me how it would play out. I mean, I'm sure you've been thinking about it and you've been looking at various things that could arise in the debate, in the conversation. Let's take it perhaps from here. We know that the heir apparent, whom some are calling the king, has been on a roadshow of sorts amongst the senior royals of the Zulu nation, right?
Yes.
Some have decided that they wouldn't be part of the meetings and the conversations there. We know for sure that there are certain powerful families of the royal family that do not recognize him as king. As things stand at the moment, has he been endorsed as the king of the Zulu nation by the presidency?
Not as far as I know, but I am aware that, for example, a number of members of the royal family would say he's parading himself as a king, but he's not.
Yes.
But whether the presidency has spoken out, I mean, I can look that up quickly. I do know that the premier or the KZN government is trying to back away from the situation.
Yes, yes.
So they've withdrawn funding from cultural events until the situation is resolved.
Yes.
I mean, I do recall vaguely earlier this year that there seemed to be some kind of camaraderie or support between President Ramaphosa and the heir apparent, but I can't really say for sure. Also, there is the case of whether the late king's will was forged or not, his signature was forged or not. So the dust hasn't settled.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that I am aware that the provincial leadership, provincial secular leadership, the constitutional secular leadership is trying to give the royal family as much space as possible, even though there are some who've argued that by not affording the funds for cultural events, the provincial government has actually drawn a line in the sand to say that they don't support the current king. I know that their argument is to say, listen, we want you guys to sort this thing out, and then whomever emerges as the rightful king, we will then support as far as that is concerned. But others are arguing that this is an opportunity for provincial government to sort of reprioritize monies that are supposed to go that way to other priorities, more secular priorities than the royal ones. We saw that the customary sort of fanfare and pageantry that would involve the king when the legislature is open was rather muted, in that the king didn't get the salutes and all of that kind of stuff. Is that part of what would signal this muting of the support by the provincial and maybe even the national government of the king's, I mean, of the monarchy?
I think so, and I think it's in a grim sense, it's to the advantage that there's this confusion, because it does allow that reprioritization you're discussing. Those new secular measurables that the president, I think the presidency is looking at, as well as the provincial government. And let's remember, it is KZN. It is the base of the former president, Jacob Zuma, and the connections. We remember the connections with that particular faction of the ruling party.
Mm.
So a part of me wonders whether there isn't some kind of covert way of strangling money flows that would be laundered through some of the ceremonialism and through just. I'm wondering if it's more than just reprioritization, but also an intra-party factional battle that where it's to the president's advantage to not take an explicit position on who's supposed to be the king of the Zulu nation at the moment.
So let me ask this question to you as you listen to this conversation with myself and Siya Khumalo. Are we seeing a and reprioritization of funds away from the pageantry of monarchs at the moment? And is it really as a result of a lack of funds, or is it because there is a greater focus on secularizing government in South Africa and pulling away from monarchy? He raises the question by asking a very strange but very poignant question if you really want to go into the issues. And I'm going to go into the issues with Siya in a few moments' time. He asks the question, if Prince Misuzulu was gay, would it count against his claim to the Zulu throne? And I suppose, Siya, you are somehow suggesting that the traditional norms of perhaps those who would choose who becomes king or not would be perhaps homophobic?
I believe they would, based on things that they have said, based on what the former king said.
Yeah.
I mean, that this is not a secret that many of our traditional leaders do tend to be homophobic. I've met a lot of activists who say they've won a few over, but the general tone of the messaging we get from traditional leaders is homophobic. And the point I'm trying to raise is it's tragic when you could miss out on good leadership because of prejudice. At the end of the day, prejudice and tradition, I'm sorry to say this, and I don't mean to lump the two together.
But
prejudice in the name of tradition does not pay the bills. Service delivery does. And for service delivery, you need expertise. And to get the best expertise that the country can offer, you may need to soften up some of your rules and look for talent. And that's not something I think that our obsession with royalty really frees our minds to do to the extent that it could.
The Zulu nation is known for its militants. You know, I think I heard recently somebody said that they were a warrior nation. That suggests levels of testosterone that go through the roof, I would imagine. That suggests levels of masculinity that some might even call toxic. That suggests the idea of a king who may be gay is in fact an insult, right? Whereas in the South African constitutional framework, that's irrelevant. That, in fact, is something that would be seen as a positive and progressive step, right?
Yes.
And for that reason, you've got that dichotomy of very, very strong currents. One progressive, constitutional and democratic, the other age-old, about a particular identity. Is that why you raised it that way? Is that the controversy you wanted to bring over in order to be able to have this conversation as openly and as brutally as possible?
Well, there are a number of ways to skin a cat, Aubrey. So the other way we could have done this, and I did mention earlier, when the House of Traditional Leaders or a traditional leader says something homophobic, it really does damage real life. It does instigate real violence. But any example of this conflict that I would have used would have been controversial.
Yeah.
For an example, if I said, would the Zulu nation be prepared to work with a female leader, a queen, not just queen regent within a limited time, who believes in polyandry? So constitutionally, there's a case to be made for it. And a few months ago, it did become a huge topic. But whichever example of this conflict you think of would be controversial. And I don't like to just make it academic.
Yeah.
Because then people can't relate to it. We have to find ways as writers to make the stakes tangible.
So no doubt in my mind about the real life consequences of attitudes, spoken or not, No doubt in my mind that the idea of corrective rape, for example, for people who are lesbian black women specifically, comes from those kinds of notions that there's something wrong with you. I absolutely hear you that these are not issues that are purely hypothetical because they've got real life consequences. I thought you were going to say to me that you have it on good authority that the king might be gay.
the threshold for proof for that kind of an assertion, for that kind of a...
You journalist types. Maybe you know things we don't know. You're going to tell us something here.
There's a huge difference between having a suspicion and being willing to, I'm willing to say this publicly. Earlier you spoke about the Zulu Nation and the testosterone business. I don't buy it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like I've seen too much. I've experienced too much. You learn to pick up a vibe from people. And for me, to a huge extent, there's a degree of self-brainwashing there because I do believe human sexuality is fluid.
Yes. Yes. No. What I meant about that is that there is this persona of the Zulu Nation being this warrior nation. I mean, it's really been part of the tourism, the lone warrior standing on the mountain, you know, surveying the land. You know what I'm trying to say with the Asuka. So what I'm trying to say is that it is. And I agree with you that in real terms, in real life, people are people, right? Human beings are human beings, right? Right. But what I was talking about is that much publicized advertorial that has been associated with the typecasting of the Zulu nation, of this great warrior nation, and then the maidens with their breasts and you know, that whole kind of thing, which can be quite caricaturing, which is not real, right? And what you're saying to me is that, yeah, Orbs, you might want to buy that, but the reality is that something else going on. I want to go into that. What vibe have you picked up, Sia?
Okay, let's go a few generations back.
Yep.
Because obviously something comes up whenever I raise a question like this. On Twitter, somebody said, Shaga.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt King Shaga.
I saw it and I thought, yo. but we know that there have been currents of that conversation for years. For many, many years, it has been tried to be silenced by others. But there are some that say, like Alexander the Great, like Attila the Hun, like that he was a warrior who was far more fluid, sexually speaking, than the general narrative would like to accept. Yeah.
Yes. And so I statistically, the chances that we have never had a sexually fluid Zulu king. That would put us on the side of caricatures that we wouldn't be human. if we had never had a sexually fluid Zulu king, I mean, is there a test for it? Just that the numbers say it must have happened between now and sometime in the past. If as a Zulu nation, we cannot say that must have happened just based on numbers and probabilities, then We are drowning in toxic masculinity. We really need to ask ourselves why we want to trap ourselves in that box and who it actually serves. Because, Aubrey, during a tourist might be here to come see the dangerous Zulu warriors or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
But by the same token, black men are more likely to get arrested.
Yeah. 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Sia Khumalo is raising some very, very real interesting issues, the issues of tradition versus constitutionality and how some of those issues clash. But he does it in a very, very interesting way. Yeah. He's been looking at the king or the heir apparent, and he's wondering if the guy was gay, would it be an issue? Now, I would like to ask you, traditionalists, and I know you listen. Give me a call on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Would this be an affront to your understanding of what traditional leadership should meet, should be and present? If a traditional leader were to be openly gay, I'll start with the Zulu. But all of our traditional communities, our ethnic groups who have leaders who may be in contention for leadership, would it be a problem for you if your leader was openly gay? You do realize, though, that constitutionally speaking, he would have not done anything wrong. He would not have affronted any position. But give me a call. I'd like to hear from you. 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. If a queen were to emerge that was happy to have many husbands, would that be a problem? Now, you see, I don't know how much you know about the Valuveru. The Valuveru are what are wrongly known as the rain queen people.
Yes.
Right? And very superficially, it has been explained. It's a very superficial explanation that doesn't go into the nuances of how all of this happens. But I have it on very, very good authority, having spoken to experts on the culture on this very platform, who say to me that yes, the Queen has a number of husbands which are chosen for her through customary processes. Yeah, Queen. Yeah. And the Queen is the only reason why I call her a Queen is because I'm bound by English grammar, but she is actually known as a King.
Yeah.
So there are certain variations in the way that our customs as African people unfold. So the issue of polyandry in the way that we were discussing it a few weeks ago becomes a moot point in that context. In that particular context. But I wonder, if the regent, the wife of the late Inkosi Zenzangakhona, had, just before she expired, right, decided that, no, I will take another husband. I wonder how that would have played out. I wonder whether the current king of the Bapedi people, who is now looking for a wife, I'm told, in Lesotho, the wife who is known as the candle wife, and again, a very derogatory way of trying to explain the heir apparent wife, but they call her the candle wife. I wonder if the guy said, no, guys, I'm not interested. I'm gay. I wonder what would happen in with the Bapedi people. Have you done any work to check what the response would be if King Misi Zulu was gay?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Based on responses to people, I extrapolated and say, well, it was good for any Zulu person, where we keep getting told. For an example, King Zwelithini said that the nation would not be this big if homosexuality was allowed. And by extrapolation, it is very reasonable to say that if King, if the heir apparent turned out to be gay, the nation would be scandalized. If they accepted those words from the former king, it must stand to reason that they would expect the same ideas around from the heir apparent.
Yes.
If there's been a change, I'd be very surprised.
Was King Shaka gay?
From what I hear, when he was,
I mean, he's the Zulu poster boy, right? I mean, he's the man, right? I mean, we had the movie with Henry Tele. I'm told Henry Tele looks nothing like the real King Shaka, by those who have, you know, I've even had it on some authority that King Shaka was so light-skinned he had freckles, you know? And
that's new to me.
I'm telling you, I've heard that. And secondly, I've been told that He had a very artistic streak about him, that he was a composer of songs. He was a composer of so there was a part of him that was very in touch with his deeply intuitive side. Now I come to you, Sia, and say, was King Shaka gay?
I'd like to say two things about that. So the first is, from what I hear, what he would tell his warriors when they said that they had needs and that they'd been away from home for very long, he would tell them to sort it out among themselves. So whether he participated or not, I've never heard any source saying he had.
Yeah.
The sources I've heard kind of said, showed him condoning it. And then when you're describing him as having an artistic and poetic streak, which it tends to be true for a lot of military leaders, by the way.
Yep.
They see war as a type of art and art as a type of war.
Yep.
When you think about somebody like Alexander the Great or King David in the Bible,
yes,
he wrote many psalms. He was a songwriter, a composer, and there's still questions.
Okay, we know that Alexander the Great was fluid. Are you saying King David was perhaps fluid too?
Well, this is the question about his friendship with Jonathan, the son of the former king, King Saul. These types of questions about the sexuality of kings have come up time and again.
Yes.
When you read the biblical text.
Yes. My love is greater for you than the love of women.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can have a long discussion about about how affection has been expressed across the ages.
Yes.
But we're trying to put in boxes things that do not always neatly fit in boxes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So, and we're really asking questions about ourselves.
Yes.
About what human sexuality is.
Precisely. Precisely. Yes. So I think that that's why the question must be asked.
Yes.
Was King Shaka gay?
I think he was very tolerant and open-minded towards sexual exploration of that nature.
Then why, if the poster boy of Zuluness was as open-minded as you suggest, would it have been taboo, continues to be taboo, to even contemplate the possibility of the current possible king of the Zulus to be gay?
Well, so what's happened across history, for example, this happened with Lobola.
Mm.
Colonialism comes along and it takes your people's story, it processes it into its own priorities and spits it back at you.
Mm.
So the story goes that when Zulu people are not going to work at the mines, laws were created around Lobola.
Yeah.
So Lord Shepston, the name will come to me, but it was Lord Shepston said, okay, here's how the natives are now going to conclude their marriages.
Yes.
And we as Zulu people now believe it was our ancestors who mandated that Lobola consists of 11 cows.
Yes.
And God forbid if you go under that number. Likewise, colonialism came along to many, many African people, found sexual diversity and said, no. And then they straight brushed it out.
Mm. I think it was Marshall, the one of Guamash, the one after which Guamash was. But it's one of those two boys. I do remember what you're talking about there. So you're saying that there was a hijacking of cultural practice made. People were made to believe that these were original cultural practices when in fact they were hijacked by colonial agendas.
Correct. I think Theophilus Chesterton, I think.
Yeah.
And another name to remember, Cecil John Rose.
Yes.
Whom I think, I hear he was completely, he was very gay and very closeted.
Yeah.
And he terrorized black people. I think it was a large part of it was due to internalized homophobia. So oppressed people oppress people. We do to other people what has been done to us. So if you grow up being beaten and abused as a child, you're likely going to think that not giving the same treatment to your children is spoiling them. Likewise, if you've got colonial administrators who are suppressing all sorts of things about themselves, they are likely going to write laws for black people to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And we recall it was, colonialism and mission and well, Christianization of South Africa came together, more or less.
Matumbe says this binary view of gender and sexuality is not even African. And I would agree with that. I mean, if you go back and you go to the ancient Kemetic sort of attitudes towards sexuality, the ancient Kushite attitudes towards sexuality, man, our own right here, the binary way of thinking is clearly connected to the arrival of colonial or missionary Christianity. When that arose, you begin to see attitudes change if you follow them closely enough. But let's speak to Sister in Bramley. Sister, good evening to you.
Evening, Brops. This is a very interesting question.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it's about time we ask these questions,
yeah,
in all honesty.
Yeah.
Can I tell you one thing? You know, these cultural norms that have been enforced on us, especially African people, are very problematic and very oppressive.
Mm.
Because in all honesty, I can tell you now, if Masuzulu was gay, he wouldn't even come anywhere near that throne. And it wouldn't just be, you know, you would be thinking men would be the only one opposing it. Not even men. Women would be standing against it. I mean, I was just thinking the other day, if had his mother survived, she wouldn't be allowed to sit comfortably in that chair, because women would be frowning upon that, the fact that a woman is suddenly leading them. So it's very problematic. You know, I think we can talk about the oppressors being the ones that are kind of enforcing these things.
But we've taken it over ourselves, yeah?
We are doing it on ourselves, and we are constantly, you know, enforcing these kind of cultural norms and making them okay for us to see ourselves as less to. We shouldn't be there because you're a woman or you're gay. You shouldn't be there. So it's a very interesting question, and I think it needs to be interrogated.
It's a very brave question.
I'm telling you, that, you know, it's okay when it's not home, bra ops. We all say, can I tell you, we all say, yeah, gay is fine, being gay is okay.
Yeah.
I have nothing against gay people. Wait until it's in your doorstep.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you start thinking differently, and that's what we need to interrogate over and over again, because we live a double standard where we say the Constitution says this, but once it hits our doorstep, it's a completely different thing. It's not in my house. My culture says this, and that's very problematic.
Sister in Bramley, much appreciated. Sia, what do you make of Sister's comments?
I agree completely.
Yeah. Interesting, she says that if Mr. Zulu was gay, do we know that he isn't?
Hey, I was hoping we would have left that question behind, but okay.
I'm asking this question because you said something quite profound, and let me bring myself into that question. You say that you said that there's certain vibes you pick up on, right?
Yes.
I ask you again, are we sure that he is not gay?
That is for him to know and disclose if he is. But I'm not going to say who on social media has said there are vibes here, but it's a recurring thing. It's another one of the reasons why that question or that particular scenario came to my mind, because a number of people, prominent people on social media, have said, "No, there's a vibe here."
No, I've seen that stuff. I've seen it myself. Listen, Sia Khumalo, thank you very much for raising a very, very important question, albeit in a fun way, albeit in a provocative way. I'm looking forward to our next conversation. I know that you write some interesting stuff, and I'm really looking forward to have some conversations with you. Thank you very much for engaging us.
Thank you.
All right. Sia Khumalo is... Hey, by the way, how do people follow you?
So my handles on social media, Sia the Writer. So that's on Twitter as well as Instagram when it decides to come back online. And Facebook, I have a page that's called With Sia Khumalo.
Much appreciated. Sia Khumalo is award-winning author and social political commentator. Interesting stuff.